This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee.
Super Saver wins the Derby for Top Pletcher.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Presented by Basic Tipton. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, along with the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, and we are coming to you from our Lexington, Kentucky studios. Looking forward to the next hour as we welcome everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220 XM Channel 206, and everyone listening worldwide with our live streaming, which is available on your computer, on your smartphone, or on your tablet at horseracingradio.net. JT, I had the privilege last night of hosting a trainer panel at the Farm Manager Club meeting. I've done this a few times with them, and it's always a delight to catch up with the trainers. And last night, Anthony Hamilton Jr., who, by the way, is going to be our guest here on the program tonight, was joined by Stephen Lister and by Wilby Van Meter, and all three of those individuals really just getting started with their careers. And it was such a fun panel because it wasn't the established trainers that we so often talk to on this particular show and in different interviews. It was really young kids that are just getting started with their careers, and to hear where they are now and where they hope to be was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's great. We hear from the same guys all the time, the Pletchers and the Shugs and the Lucases and the Bafferts, but a lot of times people need to put a face with a name or a story with a name. You know, you open your form or your program and you go, who the heck is this guy? Who the heck is this gal? Where, how did they get started? And so that's what we're here to do, introduce people.
And every time I open the show, I say, welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. And I can confirm with absolute certainty that is the case, because all three of those individuals last night were telling me about different people that they heard on the program that they really enjoyed listening to. So trainers are listening to this show, fans are listening to it, jockeys are listening to it, and
trainers' wives, most importantly.
Trainers' wives, that's right. That could be good or bad. Well, as I mentioned, tonight's guest is Anthony Hamilton Jr. He has saddled 94 starters so far in his young career. He has 10 winners, his biggest winner coming this past weekend at Keeneland. Actually, 2 weekends ago, it was opening weekend at Keeneland when he saddled Fioretti to an impressive victory in the Grade 2 Thoroughbred Club of America. That was his first Graded Stakes victory, and he's with us now on Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton. Anthony, welcome to the program.
Thank you guys for having me. Really enjoy the show.
Yeah, thank you so much, and happy to have you on board. And boy, Fioretti, I assume, even though that was on, what, October 3rd, you're still on cloud nine some 11 days later.
Oh, we are. That was a huge win for us. And just got to keep the ball rolling, so to say. So,
yeah, so impressive under Sophie Doyle. Sophie joined us on our Jock Talk program last week, and she told the story of Fioretti coming into this race and the confidence that she had in Fioretti and the confidence she had in you to have Fioretti ready for that race. I guess that confidence probably goes both ways.
It absolutely does. Sophie's done a great job ever since the first time she sat on her to get this filly to settle a little bit for us. And she rides a smart race, and she's a hard worker. And that confidence rubs off. I mean, she's the one that comes to the paddock with a smile on her face and says, you know, let's enjoy this. So it's a nice reminder to have somebody like that in your corner.
Yeah, well, I was super impressed. I happened to be sitting in the press box when she was doing her interview, and I was super impressed with her. Very intelligent and really thoughtful of the horses and the people that she works with. And that's, I don't want to say it's unusual, but for someone that comes from a foreign country to come over here and be an example to other riders about their business, I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, you know, she works so hard at it. That's the that's one of the keys that's really paid off in my mind. You know, if I need a horse work, she's here. You know, she's and you're right, she is smart. She doesn't want to change things. We keep things routine. And she knows when she knows where she needs to be on the racetrack. You know, she doesn't find a lot of bad spots, and she finishes really strong, which is, I think, one of the knocks, you know, people say about girl riders is that they just can't finish as strong as the guys. And she works really hard at being able to finish those races.
Anthony, what does a horse like Fioretti mean to you and to your young career?
I mean, this is why you wake up in the morning. It's a whole lot easier to wake up in the morning when you got a horse like Fioretti in the morning. That's for sure. You know, and all the support you get from everyone. It's why we're here. Is to have a horse in the Breeders' Cup, in the Derby. You know, to win these big races, to be a competitor at this level is what you strive for. So. You know, you just got to, we're trying to keep that going. You don't want to lose sight of it.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Breeders' Cup, which is just around the corner, and Fioretti going to be going up against the defending champ, Judy the Beauty, who, by the way, she also defeated Judy the Beauty in that Thoroughbred Club of America. She'll get a rematch with her in the Filly and Mare Sprint. Do you allow yourself to look ahead to that point and think about what it might be like if you were to get to the wire first in the Breeders' Cup?
Yeah. Absolutely. you know, that driving to work every day. Every time I get in the truck and get behind the wheel, you know, if the radio's not on, you're thinking about winning your next big race or even next race period, you know. Getting your picture taken is a great feeling, but especially on that kind of stage. So I'd think about it more than I'm not sure, maybe more than most, but I think Sophie does the same thing. I think, you know, I think a lot of guys out here do the same thing. I think owners do that. I think that's what keeps you coming back. That's what keeps people at the sales.
Yeah, it's that optimism and hope that drives our game, really. And it's good to remember those things every day because it's not the easiest job in the world. I mean, when you have to get up at 4 o'clock every morning and head to the track 365 days a year.
You know. Absolutely. Wins, you know, and you're gonna lose a whole lot more races than you win. So it's important, you know, to keep this game fun because this is a sport. It's supposed to be, if it's not fun for you, then you shouldn't be in it. That's on any level, whether you're a rider or a groom or a trainer. If it's not fun, if it's not enjoyable, then it's time for a career change.
Yeah, I asked you this question last night when we were hosting that panel, Anthony. I asked it of all of our panelists up there. And the question I asked was, why would anyone want to be a horse trainer when you lay out everything that you have to do in order to be successful in this sport? The early mornings, the no days off, the working holidays, working weekends. Why would anybody want to do this for a profession?
I think it's that feeling you get in the pit of your stomach when those gates open. And that happens every time, whether you're at Turfway in the middle of winter or whether you're in the TCA. That feeling is, I think that's what keeps trainers waking up in the morning. I think that's what keeps owners heading back to the sales. It's what keeps breeders, you know, breeding, is to get that rush. If they could bottle it, you know, there'd be a line out the door.
Yeah. Best drug in the world, really.
Yeah.
And probably the most potent because everybody in the game feels the same way. I mean, you can't do this for money. I mean, you just can't because there isn't any money in it. The people that make money at racing are few and far between, but you got to do it for love and for the sport and the competition of it. And if that's what you have in your heart, it's easy to get up in the morning. It's It's you know, if you're doing it to make a living, it's the worst job in the world. I used to say if I worked at McDonald's as many hours as I did training horses, I'd be a billionaire because all the overtime that I worked would add up quickly, you know. Yeah. And it's just crazy.
I think I referenced this last night, but I spent a couple of years down in Camden at the Camden Training Center, and you know, Mr. Whiteley would drive in there every morning. He didn't have any horses there, but he'd drive in and he'd watch some horses train and just see what was going on. He couldn't get away from it, you know, and didn't want to. I think that says a lot about the people and the dedication and the love for the sport.
Visiting with Anthony Hamilton Jr. here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Anthony, you mentioned being at Camden. Let's go all the way back to the beginning. Tell me about growing up and getting involved with racing. What do you remember about going to the track for the first time and getting hooked on the sport?
Well, I remember being locked in tack rooms when I was a kid. And you know, while mom was out galloping horses and dad was breaking babies and, you know, getting dragged to Penn National in the middle of winter, in the middle of the night. And my uncle, after he called me after this race, he manages Jonathan Shepherd's farm, and he said, I guess all those nights we dragged you up to the Penn National paid off, which was pretty neat, you know, to get those kinds of phone calls. But and we were just it was all horses all the time from a very, very small age. Both my aunts on my dad's side have had licenses, and they still live here in Kentucky. My grandfather, my dad, so everybody was really has all and still is. For the most part.
Yeah, it sounds like a family affair. Tell me more about your mom and dad and their involvement in racing.
They, dad grew up, you know, under Ham, and he worked the starting gate for a while, managed a few farms. He had his own sales consignment, trained off and on. He kind of wore a lot of hats. And mom helped him on weekends. She was a school teacher, but she did a lot more show horses. She's got a show barn up in Maryland now. And they bred, they dabbled in breeding. They bred Valley Maid. It was third in the distaff in, I want to say, 1990 year Gopher One broke down.
Do you have other siblings that are involved in the sport?
I don't. I have a sister. She's in Tennessee, but she went to college. So
that was... She went to college and you went to Penn National.
You can see who the favorite was.
We got to go to Penn National. For me, it was my first trip. I think it was Mike's too, last summer and for the Penn Mile. And I really, really liked it there. I mean, we had a great time. And it seemed like the fans were really enjoying themselves. A lot of people... A lot of girls running around in Daisy Dukes and a lot of guys out drinking beer with their buddies. And, I mean, it just was a great atmosphere in a really beautiful place. And I was super impressed with it. I know it wasn't like right. that when you were kicking around when you were a kid.
No, not quite. I mean, I grew up in Maryland. And the Mid-Atlantic has always had a strong thoroughbred presence, even the last 10 years when things really weren't looking good for Maryland racing. And Virginia was starting to go down the tubes and... You know, everything was the casinos in West Virginia and, you know, the purses. Maryland is, if you ask somebody who won the Kentucky Derby, they probably wouldn't be able to tell you, but if you asked them who won the Preakness, they'd know right away. That's kind of how Maryland works. There's a really strong Maryland Million Days, huge. And the owners there and the breeders have been really supportive throughout these years, and it's nice to see. It's nice to see them get some money back up there.
Anthony, we talked about the dedication and the commitment it takes to be involved in this sport. And let's face it, it is certainly not easy. But here you are growing up with your sister. Your mom and your dad are both involved on a full-time basis. How are they able to balance the family life with the horse racing life?
I didn't know there was a difference.
Yeah, there was no balance.
Well, for your sister, it sounds like there was.
Yeah, well, she's 10 years younger than me, so she was a little. She, but yeah, for as far as she, By that time, Dad had already moved to Kentucky, and my mom remarried. She's married the racetrack photographer from the Maryland Jockey Club, Stream McHugh. So that was a little different for her. I grew up in tack rooms, pretty much, whether it was at the sales or at the racetrack. There was a time, about a two-year span there, where we leased Sagamore, and my uncle was down there, and so there was a lot of memorable times on that facility, which was a lot of fun, because I had pretty much the run of the place, and she would have showed a lot more at that point. Mom had her show barn going up and running by then, so there's probably a big difference, which is probably why she ended up in college and I ended up in sitting in this tacker and talking to you guys.
Did you ever consider doing anything other than training horses?
Not really. I always knew that there was going to be room for me in the thoroughbred industry to some capacity. And a lot of that was due to the fact that I didn't really know how to do anything else. It was all horses. The first job was working for KGAR Stables, prepping yearlings, 15, and then kind of rolled from there. I went to Pimlico, worked for Franny Campitelli for a while. And then I spent 2 years in Camden. And then I came up here and I worked for Dad. I worked some sales and did some sales prep up here. And so it was more jump, you know, there was a lot, you know, growing up with them being so widespread, it really broadened. It wasn't like he was just training horses. You know, I grew up with him managing farms. We foaled mares. We prepped yearlings. We broke babies, you know, and we'd take the odd one to the racetrack and take him to the races. I think the most starts Dad ever had in a single year was 12.
Wow.
But it was just that solid base of horsemanship. And his father was kind of the same way. You know, they both started on the starting gate and kind of worked their way from there. At one point, and Kathy knows a little bit better than I do, but I know at one point Ham had the Phipps horses down in Florida, and that was a big deal. And then he came up here and he managed Wagner Farm for a long time. Terry Arnold was working there at the time. He now manages Dixieana. He's married to my other aunt, Barbara.
Oh, this is quite the horse racing family, isn't it? It's all kind of intertwined.
Is. Yeah, Kathy Sweezy, my other aunt, she trained for a while, a few years, and she's got Timbertown now. They're doing a great job out there.
What do you learn, Anthony, when you're working with young horses? You mentioned breaking babies and going through and doing everything hands-on from the ground up. What do you learn when you're doing it that way that helps you today when you're training them?
I think just being able to listen to what they're telling you, and that rolls right into older horses. I mean, they'll tell you what's going on. You just have to listen. You have to be able to, and they're gonna speak in different ways. They're gonna let you know, you know, I'm right or I'm not, or you know, I need some more time or I don't. Just like a baby, if you're, you know, some babies take 2 weeks. And all of a sudden, they're going really well, and others are going to take 90 days. It's the same sort of thing. And I think the more you're around horses, the more you start to understand their language.
Yeah, I would have to echo those sentiments. I mean, I grew up in L.A., and the only horses we saw were at the racetrack. So it was a little different path for me. But later on in life, foaling mares and breaking babies and doing all those things, You do learn different skills and different messages that the horses send, and I think that really separates the best trainers, the ones that pay attention to their horses and really understand those subtle cues that they give you, as opposed to just considering them as athletes you know, we're gonna work 5/8 today and 6 days we're gonna work 3/4. I mean. Yeah, there's
right,
so much.
I think foaling mares will do that a lot for you too, because there's, you know, there's all kinds of little signs that you can keep an eye on when you're following a mare. I'm waiting for a mare to fall. I mean, they're going to tell you, you can usually nail it down to within 24 hours. And it's important to be able to pay attention to that. And the same goes on the racetrack. Like Jude was saying, it just gets you in tune to paying attention to those, the little things that are going to let you know, where this horse is at and where they need to be and what they need to be doing.
Yeah, and so many of the trainers that join us on this program will tell us that you have to, in order to be successful, look at each horse as an individual as opposed to just trying to fit every horse to your program. Kind of what we're talking about. Would you agree with that, Anthony?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Without a doubt. Especially when they get older. I mean, with the babies and stuff, just getting them started, it's a lot easier just because they're just learning. So it's not more figuring out, how far this horse needs to go or how fast he is or, what's making him tick, what's going to make him run his best. It's more about just getting them to go through the motions at that point. And then you can start finishing them off.
Anthony Hamilton Jr., our special guest on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Anthony, do you spend much time at the horse sales picking out young horses?
Not really. We have a farm, so we sell our yearlings or weanlings every year. We'll always have five or six. We've got 13 to foal this year. So I keep pretty well in tune to what's going on, but we wouldn't go shopping for yearlings. Our market is more, we've bought a couple two-year-olds over the past few years and of course, older horses to make into broodmares after the racing career.
So you're always on the search for prospects. Are they strictly broodmares, or do you look for like fillies you can race a little bit and then turn them into broodmares?
That's where our focus is. Like this November, we'll go in and we'll shop around for horses that maybe we can run through next year and then put in full 2017, I guess. That's the main focus. We want to keep the barn going and keep some good stock. I mean, I'd like to keep about 10 nice mares out there, and we've got a few geldings in the barn as well. So it's pretty broad, but I've got 3 2-year-olds right now, but I wouldn't do much yearling shopping. I'd stay very up to date on the sales results and who's buying what. And I pay attention to what horses I liked, what sires I liked, and because going into the next year, we got to think about, who we're going to breed to. So where I wouldn't have the clientele that said, here's some money, go buy me some yearlings, I'd still be very in tune to what's going on as far as the sales market goes.
So if you were going to describe your approach and your philosophy to training horses, Anthony, how would you do it?
I think what we touched on earlier, it's patience and making sure that you have an individual. You're treating them all as individuals. If you try to, especially with a small stable or with any stable, really, you have to be able to figure out what's gonna make this horse the best he can be, and put a plan together that's gonna let him achieve those goals. Because it's really about them getting to their fullest potential. I just, if I can stay out of their way and they can do it, perfect. That's even better. Just trying to let them do their thing, but that's usually the good ones. The other ones, you're going to have to find a way to get them to be their best.
Dude, this sounds like what you always say. Just keep them happy, right?
Yeah, that's the real key, is just keep them happy. Do you have Pletcher-esque ambitions? I mean, would you want to train 300 horses, or are you a guy more like me that is happy with like 20?
I think I'd be happy with a 20. It makes it hard for me because I've got the farm here. So if there were dreams of training 300 horses, then there wouldn't be any foaling mares in the early months, because I'm happy with, 15 to 20 mark. And good ones. That's what you're looking for.
Well, that word patience that you used, Anthony, is common throughout so many of these shows. Several trainers will tell us the key to being successful is being patient. But along with being patient, I think sometimes comes frustration, too, because they kind of go hand in hand. You can be patient, but boy, you can get frustrated when you think you're right there and then something happens and you get a setback. How difficult is it to deal with those kind of moments?
You know, that's the worst thing. The worst thing that I could hear in the morning is, Patron, can you look at this?
Yeah.
That's when you're like, oh, no.
And they're not talking tequila bottle here. They're talking.
Yeah. Patron, can you look at this? I mean, your heart just drops. You know, it's hard. It's hard, but you just got to roll with it. You know, you got to back up and punt. That's part of this business.
And that's
what every day in some capacity.
That's one of the problems with a small stable is that, you know, one horse is a huge percentage of your barn. So, you know, if you've got 300, then, you know, you have bigger fish to fry. But when you only have 15 or 20, and one gets hurt, and it's horrible. It's horrible when any horse gets hurt. But I mean, it can really cast a pall over the operation for a few days, and you know, it's tough. It's a tough racket.
Sure, and we kind of touched on this last night. The same capacity with claiming, you know, those guys that have the 200, 300 horse strings. It's nothing for them to drop a horse from 58 into for 20. And, you know, there's seven claims in for that horse. And every horse in your barn, when you've got a small stable, means something. You know, so you're a little bit more hesitant to, you know, Dad always said, hey, you know, if you think that horse is worth 30, you better run him for 20. And it's a lot harder to do that when you've only got 15 or 20 head.
Yeah, well, you know, if it was easy, everybody would do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I used your line during that panel last night, by the way. I used that very same line. That goes back, Anthony, to a piece that Jude produced along with G.D. Hieronymus at Keeneland that won an Eclipse Award. And the piece was, if it was easy, everyone would do it. And it talks about the life of a trainer. It is not an easy racket by any stretch of the imagination.
No, it's not. They say a bottle of gin and the box of Tums in the bottom of the desk drawer. That's the... the trainer's medication.
We're going to continue this visit with Anthony Hamilton Jr. second half of the program. Make sure you stay with us. It's Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
The Fasic Tipton November sale annually posts the highest average and median of any mixed sale in the world. Over the past 10 years, 142 fillies and mares have brought prices over $1 million, and 3 world records have been broken. Last year, the Fasic Tipton November sale sold 23 seven-figure fillies and mares, more than any other mixed sale in the world, with an average sale price far greater than our nearest competitor. The world's premier breeding stock event, November 1st, 2015 at Fasic Tipton. Where will you be?
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Ross Amaya, what a finish to the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
And they're off in New York. The premier state-bred program in the United States. When you own a New York bred, your horse can run for more than $44 million in purses restricted to registered New York breds. And the New York program pays awards to breeders, owners, and stallion owners when their New York breds finish first, second, or third at New York tracks. We have the quality.
Day at the spa, all the way.
You have the opportunity. New York breds, get with the program. The best program.
Don't miss Maryland's Day at the Races on Saturday, October 17th at Laurel Park. Come celebrate the 30th anniversary of the Jim McKay Maryland Million Day, a celebration of Maryland's horses and lots of fun for all ages. First race is at 12:15 with 11 exciting races. Great entertainment on the track and a collector's cap, too. Don't miss out on the fun at Laurel Park on Saturday, October 17th. For more information, visit MarylandMillion.com or MarylandRacing.com.
Start now with your Kale Density Mare and Foal Feeding Program. Sales results were obvious at this year's Keeneland September Yearling Sale. Yearlings produced from mares fed Kale Density through their formative year were impressive, as well as horses trained and raced in 2014 and so far in 2015. Clean radiographs, conformity, strong bones, and overall health was the big winner at auction and on the track. Order your plan today at KaleDensity.com or call 877-744-9006 for more information.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Judy the Beauty is third toward the inside, three lengths off the lead. Fioretti goes fourth, Sweet Whiskey is fifth between horses. And then, Hey Kitty, 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 Kitty moves up on the outside, out in the center of the racetrack. It's wide open. Lee Court has the lead. Judy the Beauty, crying out for room, is trapped down toward the rail. Here's Fioretti down the center of the racetrack. And also, Hey Kitty, 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 who comes charging up on the outside. Hey Kitty, 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 chasing Fioretti. Now Judy the Beauty has an opening, but the wire's coming. Fioretti with the lead. Fioretti springs the upset for Sophie Doyle in the Thoroughbred Club of America.
Fioretti so impressive in winning that Grade 2 Thoroughbred Club of America Stakes opening weekend at Keeneland. Of course, Fioretti trained by our special guest here tonight, Anthony Hamilton Jr. She is making her way to the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint, and we are making our way through this Trainer Talk edition presented by Fasig Tipton. Welcome back, Mike Penna, Jude Feld. We are in our Lexington studios, and don't forget, if you missed any portion of this program, you can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net. A podcast of this show and all of our shows are available for you each and every time you visit the site. It's horseracingradio.net. Anthony, when you hear that replay of Fioretti winning the TCA, what goes through your mind when you're listening to that stretch call?
That we've got 3.5 weeks till the Breeders' Cup.
Always looking ahead.
That was, it was great. You know, it was surreal. It was, you just wait for the wire. That's what I was doing, waiting for the wire, because we got just nipped in the groupie doll. So just waiting for the wire.
Well, it's funny. I asked jockey Sophie Doyle that very same question when she appeared on our Jock Talk program. And I asked her, when did you know you had this race won? And she said, when I crossed the wire. And she referenced that race where you got nipped right at the wire in the last jump. And she said, I wasn't taking anything for granted in this one.
No, that was heartbreaking. That horse ran a great race. We were just second best. Sophie couldn't have ridden any different. Fioretti couldn't have run any different. It was, she ran a winning race that day. Just one of those things. Just got caught. So,
you told me during the commercial break that you might be able to recite that stretch call word for word. How many times have you watched the replay?
There's not enough. Not enough. That's a lot. We've watched a lot. I think everybody has.
Well, you know, it's one of those moments that you may end up treasuring forever. When you get down and depressed, you can put that race on and remember that you do know how to train horses. I had a call of Larry Colmus's that I used to do that with when I'd go, oh my God, I think I've totally lost it. And I'd put on Freya Stark and listened to Larry call her winning the California Oaks and boost my spirits. So that's a valuable thing to have.
Yeah, it is. Hopefully we'll be able to replay the Breeders' Cup call. That'd be the...
Well, that would be nice, too.
That'd be nice, too, but not taking anything away from this one. It was sweet.
Yeah, so that race, Anthony, was October 3rd, the TCA. Now you have to wait the 4 weeks until the Breeders' Cup. What are these 4 weeks like for a trainer leading into it?
For me, anyway, it's more about planning and just trying to figure out, when's the best time to ship? When are we going to work? I mean, I'd thought about these things before. I mean, our whole plan from the Roxolana was to go groupie doll. If she ran well in the groupie doll, we'd skip the open mind and we'd go straight to the TCA because we wanted to be fresh if we were to win it. So now there wasn't really a lot of thought past the TCA. Everything was planned out up till then. And then it was like, okay, well, what do we do now? Now it's time to put together. It came together like we wanted, and now we gotta make it through these 4 weeks and figure out the best plan of attack for Fioretti and Sophie and get her going into this race better than she ever has been, because she's going to need every bit of it.
Yeah, Judy the Beauty had kind of a rough trip that day, and
she did. But I still, you watch that replay, and of course I'm going to say this, but. I think even if she's clear down there, they'll know if she catches us. It's a tough call. I know Sophie said Mike Smith came up to her in the jocks room and said, I looked over at the quarter pole and I thought you had more horse than I.
Of course, Sophie Doyle talking about Mike Smith and what she said in the jocks room. And, that had to be one of those moments that for you to hear that, Anthony, had to be pretty special.
Oh, it's huge. It was great. I knew she was sharp going in, and it had been part of the plan, and I knew she liked the six, she likes the racetrack. It was just a matter of if she was good enough to do it or not. I was kind of shocked that we got the 17-1. To be honest, I mean the two horses they had picked ahead of us were both coming out of the open mind, and we skipped that race. So. I thought we'd be 8-1. I thought we'd be somewhere in there. I thought she'd earned it. But it doesn't hurt my feelings.
Small trainers, they like to put a bet down once in a while. It helps supplement the income.
Did you bet on her, Anthony? I'll put you on the spot.
I did. I'm not. One of the partners always gets me a little win ticket. But I'd say John Gaver and I had handicapped that race for about 3 weeks. Since when the nominations came out, and he loaded up on her. So
we're visiting with Anthony Hamilton Jr. on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You mentioned one of your partners. Tell me more about the people that you have the privilege of being associated with on the owner side of things, Anthony.
Tony Braddock is a great, amazing person. He was actually friends with my grandfather. My grandfather bought horses for him. Ham did on my dad's side, and then they were very good friends. So he knew Kathy and Barb and Joe, and he knows everybody from the family. And it was pretty interesting. Dad and him got together about 10 years ago to go into the Two Hearts Farm Partnership, and they bought a mare, and now we're up to. I think 15 mares and 10, we had 9 in training right now. So it's really grown into, and Dad passed away in January. So for Tony to have the faith in me and the fortitude to kind of drive on with this whole thing with me, instead of Dad, it was special. It meant a lot,
Bob Baffert's talked about how emotional this Triple Crown run was for him because his parents are no longer with him and he had a close relationship and they used to watch all the races. I can imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, it has to be very much the same scenario for you, having recently lost your dad. You had that close relationship with him, you were in the business together. That has to be maybe even more emotional for you when you have this kind of success now. Is that true?
It is. I mean, he'd really enjoy it. You know, this is why he did it, you know, for all those years. This is why he took every step, every morning was for these horses. I mean, there was never a day, unless there was a basketball game on, TVG was on. You know, there was a racing form on the kitchen table every day. It was, this is just why we wake up in the morning, our moments like this. So it's important, because I probably don't do this enough, but it's important to step back and enjoy the moment. And Sophie's really good at reminding me of doing that.
Well, they're so few and far between. Shea Knight used to say that you should be able to rent the winner's circle, because all the things you have to overcome to get there, the exercise riders screwing up, the bad ride from the jockey, all of those things that go into winning a race, and then you finally get everything right and you win one and you're in the winner's circle for what amounts to about 15 seconds. And he goes, it's not right. You should be able to rent it and have a party in there. And I thought that was a great, you know, comment. It stuck with me my whole life. Because it's true. I mean, we work so hard to get to that moment, and then, you know, you're in and out. And nowadays, at least, there's usually a reporter when you win a graded race to talk to you, so it extends it a little bit. But I mean, your average race, you're in and out of there in 2 seconds, and it's, you know, back to business as usual. And in 30 minutes, you're the guy that won the last race. You know, so it's interesting that quick moment is what we all work for, and it is so quick.
Yeah, to play off that a little bit, you know, after we won the TCA, I was ready to go back to the test barn, you know, watch this filly cool out. And Ben Huffman came up and he said, "Have you ever been in the director's room?" And I said, "No." And he said, "You got to come. You don't get to come here much. You don't get to come here very often." So we had to walk back there, and he took all the owners back there, and they had a champagne toast, and everybody was very was full of congratulations and smiles and hugs and pictures, and then it was time to go back to the test barn.
Back to work.
Yeah.
Anthony, how about the rest of your team? Tell me about some of those team members that helped make this a successful operation.
I've got an incredible group of guys that work for me. Mike Heath, who rides most of the horses for us, and Rene Delgado, they both do a wonderful job. I've got some great grooms in Selmo Neary. He came from Amelia Fojan. She, from Bonaterra Stud. She had a bunch of horses in training here, and she was down to two. She was taking everything back to the farm, focus on breeding. And she called me and she said, "I've got a guy that's worked for me for 10 years. And he doesn't want to go to the farm." And I had four horses at the time. I was rubbing them myself. And I said, "Send him over." And so we've kind of gone from there. And he's still with me. And hopefully he's with me for the next 20. And then I can't leave out the guys at the farm. Manny, I depend on him a lot for the farm, because it frees me up to be at the racetrack more. And, I've got a good group, so we're just going to keep everything going. Keep them happy, keep the horses happy, keeps me happy, keeps the owners happy. It all starts with keeping them happy, I think, is the trick.
Yeah, it's harder sometimes to train the owners than it is the horses. And if the owners are happy, the horses keep flowing. So you have to look at the business side as well as the training side. And oftentimes, young trainers forget about that. They're so into the horses that they forget that they have to take care of business, and it's vitally important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's communication is a huge part of this, because they want to know how their horse is doing. They want to know how the horse worked, and that's what keeps them. I mean, Tony, he loves talking about horses. The guy owns a company in Virginia, and I think he cares more about his racehorses than he does what's going on up there in Virginia. So,
yeah, nobody ever turns down a call from their trainer. They can be it can be a billionaire in a huge corporate meeting, and the trainer calls and they pat you right through, you know.
And a lot of times they'll answer and they'll go, excuse me, my trainer's calling.
I'll be with you in a minute, Mr. Trump. Right. I'll be with you in a minute. That's great. Anthony, how closely or how much emphasis do you place on important communication between you and your exercise riders every day?
Mike's worked for me for 3 years now, so he kind of knows what I want, and I know the way that keeps him the happiest, because it's a give and take. I'm not out there like they were 30 years ago telling me he's not allowed to talk to people and ripping him off the back of a horse if he doesn't do something I like right. You know, we work together to make sure that we're achieving these goals that we've set, that I've set. This is where I want us to be. And this is how I want us to get there, and this is what we're going to do. So it's in the same way with the guys in the barn. Everybody kind of is with the program, and that's a great thing, that it can just flow. And I tell you what, the last 2 weeks they've been bouncing around the shed rows. There's been smiles and donuts and coffee made, and everybody's just happy to be around, which is nice. It always changes the atmosphere in the barn when stuff like this happens.
What are some of the goals that you set for yourself?
Well, I think we're running through them right now. We're getting there. I think just making sure we're taking sound horses to the races that are 110%, because there's going to be a lot of horses that you have to run against that are going to be 100%. So you've got to make sure that you're taking yours, that you've got that edge. And that's what we're trying. And it can be difficult to communicate that to owners sometimes, because, you know, we take our time, and it's going to be, you know, it might not be 90 days. That 2-year-old coming out of the sale might not be ready in 90 days. It might take them a little longer, because we're going to go in and we're going to make sure we're right.
Yeah, that's a hard thing for owners to handle. They crave action, and it seems like every time there's a race, they want to run, and that's a very delicate balance between, you know, having your horse super ready to run and in the right spot, as opposed to entering, you know, just because the owner happens to be in town that week. And
right, the worst thing they ever did is put those condition books online. That's like a, and it's man, it makes it hard.
Yeah, because you get those people that call and go, well, there's a race on Wednesday, there's a race on Friday, right. There's one on Saturday. Oh, no, that's a Philly race. You can't run in there.
Right, yeah. That's you're exactly right. Oh, yeah. I didn't see that.
Yeah. Oh, man. I've never been able to understand how somebody that's sitting behind a desk in New York can know more about a horse than you, who are with it every day in California. It's never failed to amaze me how that could be, but it seems like it is.
They crave action, and the more involved they can be, the better, and I think it's good, but it is it can be testing.
Yeah, if you want action, buy more horses.
Right? There you go. Yeah, that's it. Perfect. You know, Tony came into town. He missed the Giants Causeway, and he came into town for he came into town for the Giants Causeway. And he was amazed. You know, Keeneland rolls out the red carpet for those stake horses. So after the race, Philly runs great, you know. And I go upstairs, and I'm sitting down with him, and he's in the stakes room. And he said, you know, they brought me the bill, and everything was comped except for the drinks. And I said, yeah, Tony, you know. And he said, do they do that? They just do that for stake horses? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, we need more stake horses. I said, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, right. That sounds like a good plan to me.
Yeah, please supply them quickly.
Right, yeah.
Anthony Hamilton Jr. here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Anthony, one thing that always strikes me, and Jude, I've watched the way that you interact with other trainers that you used to train with when they're on the road. I also watched listen to the stories that you tell about the old days and the trainers that you used to work with. And Anthony, when we were hosting that panel last night at the farm managers meeting, Stephen Lister, Wilby Van Meter had great rapport with you. And the three of you together could kind of relate to what one another was saying. And I'm just wondering about that camaraderie with trainers. You're competing against each other, but there's a certain bond and a certain camaraderie that goes along with that, isn't there?
Absolutely. I love to see those guys do well, you know, as long as it's not against me. It's Ben Colebrook was the first one to come up to me after the Roxalana, you know, because he had Willow Hills in there, and she was 1-5. And he was the first one to come up and shake my hand and say congratulations. I think that says a lot about everybody. There's a camaraderie. I love seeing those guys do well. You know, I know Steven is a great guy. Wilby's a great guy. And you can throw Ben in that mix too, I guess. He's okay. But
I'll vouch for Ben. We worked together at 505 many moons ago. He's a great guy.
He is. Everybody gets along. I'm not stable with those guys, and actually I think Wilby's out at Spectrum now, and Steven's kind of split between Keeneland and High Point, and Ben's got horses in every crevice of the nation, so you know, but we see each other at the races. You're on the phone with each other. You're trying to figure out, you know, whether you're talking about who's going in what race, or, you know, I can't believe that they're not putting this extra up, or if you have a horse, or, you know, whatever it is. It's easier than, you know, because we're all doing the same thing. You know, we're all going through this. We're fighting the same fight every day. It's the same struggle for all of us. So I think we can relate to each other in the daily struggles of being a young trainer and trying to overcome that, you know, the Pletchers and the Makers and get some wins.
Is there ever any friendly smack talk among trainers?
No. Why would that happen? No. I'd say daily. It's constant.
Anthony, what's been the most difficult lesson that you've had to learn so far in your young career?
I think not to take losing as hard as you can. If you let it eat you and get to you, or not just losing a race, but like we were talking about earlier, you know, a horse pops up with a shin, or he's a week away and something happens, and you know, you got to get over that, and you got to have a short memory as far as letting that stuff hit you emotionally, because it can really eat up at you.
Yeah, it's almost like being a relief pitcher. I mean, you know, you get shelled on Wednesday night, you got to go back out there on Thursday night, and that
you got to go back out there, and it's, you know, you have a horse get beat 20 lengths, you got to come out to the barn in the morning. You know, that's, and you got to be here. Everybody else is going to be here.
Yeah, but in some ways, isn't it like a puzzle, Anthony? When you do have a horse that you think is going to run well, doesn't run well, now it's on you to figure out why and what you can do to get that horse to run well next time, right?
Absolutely. But you can let that, if you let that emotion get to you of, man, I thought we were right, and I was wrong. You know, I was way off, or he was outclassed, or whatever the case may be. You know, the easiest way to do it is just blame the jockey. That's the easiest way around that. You know, now blame the jockey, and everything's good. So.
Yeah, sometimes the jockeys, they lead you down that path too. Gary Stevens and I have been great friends, but we had a horse one time that Gary got off him after working him one morning. He said, "This horse is going to win us the Kentucky Derby." Well, you know, when Gary Stevens tells you that, right? You're thinking about what Armani suit can I buy to go to the Derby with, right? This sucker broke his mane for $5,000 at Turf Paradise. He was the biggest Morning Glory of all time. So, you know, and when we ran him, it was like, what the heck? This horse is supposed to win the Derby. He finished seventh, got beat like 18 lengths. I mean, oh, what did I do wrong here? You know. So.
Yeah, I'd be sure to remind him of that every time I saw him.
Oh, you don't know Gary very well.
He can be a bit more violent than Sophie. Anthony, how about when you were kind of growing up and looking at being a trainer, were there other trainers that you idolized or thought, hey, this guy knows what he's doing, I wouldn't mind having my operation be like his someday?
You know, not really, because like I said, it was never something. I mean, of course, you watch the horses. That was the main thing. And I worked in a steeplechase barn really throughout high school and most of my young, all through high school. I worked with steeplechase horses and sales primarily, and it was more about just getting involved in some capacity. I didn't know that I was going to end up with, you know, horses in training. But I knew not until I went to work for Dad and the farm started to grow and he said, here, you know, you got to fly. You know, here you go. Here's a couple of horses. Let's see where we end up.
Well, Anthony,
it was really more family oriented. There was a lot of high expectations there.
Only,
you know, they'd all had, you know, they, my grandfather, my dad, my aunts, my uncle manages Jonathan Shepherd's farm. While they weren't, you know, nobody ever trained a Derby winner. They were all very highly respected to whoever you would talk to about their horsemanship and their way of doing things. And that was very important to me to make sure, and still is, to make sure that people say the same about me and that I keep that horsemanship and that kind of an attitude. That's very important to me.
Anthony Hamilton Jr. here on Trainer Talk. Anthony, only about a minute or so left before we have to wrap this up. Always like to end by asking trainers what other hobbies they have, what other interests they have outside of horse racing. So in the rare instance you're not at the racetrack, what else do you enjoy doing?
Sleep. Sleep's a good one. I do enjoy playing golf, but I've played probably twice in the last 2 years. It's been a busy couple of years. So any time I can get out to the golf course is a good day, but they're few and far between.
He's a horrible judge of NFL football teams, by the way.
I got something I can do with that terrible towel.
Yeah, I'll join you with that.
His Baltimore ties run deep, put it that way.
There you go. Black and purple.
Yeah.
Well, Anthony, this has been an absolute delight to hear your story and to, you know, hear you talk about Fioretti and that big win on October 3rd. And want to wish you all the best going down the road to the Breeders' Cup, and we'll look forward to catching up with you out there at Keeneland.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
And Anthony, like all of our guests who appear here on Trainer Talk, receives a gift courtesy of one of our sponsors. It's Flair Equine Nasal Strips. We'll get those out to him. And, man, what a delight, huh?
Yeah, it was fun. Great hour.
Yeah. Trust me, the guy knows what he's doing. He can train some horses, and maybe on the biggest stage is where he'll get his signature win, at least his first signature win, with Fioretti. Don't forget, if you missed any portion, you can go to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast of this program and all of our shows. And you can also do that, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for the Ponta, for the Pick Four, Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time on Trainer Talk.